Ayad Akhtar joins us now to talk about his novel American Dervish, the Leonard Lopez Show Book Club's July selection. It's a coming-of-age story that follows Hayat, a boy growing up with his Pakistani-American parents, who experiences a romantic and spiritual awakening and disillusionment. When he's not writing novels, Mr. Akhtar is also an actor, screenwriter, and playwright. He won the Pulitzer Prize this year for his play, Disgraced. American Dervish is his debut novel. It's published by Back Bay Books, and I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show. Hello.
Hi, Leonard. Nice to be here.
And we hope that you, our listeners, have read the book. You can leave questions for Mr. Akhtar on our show page at WNYC.org, as well as on Facebook and Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. You can also give us a call at 212-433-9692. What's a dervish? I associate that with Sufism.
Right. A dervish in the Islamic tradition is basically someone is a renunciate, someone who gives up for the sake of God, for the sake of the pursuit of a spiritual life.
Like a mendicant friar in Christianity.
Exactly, a mendicant.
Or sadhus in Buddhism or in Hinduism.
Exactly. You know, it's that tradition of believing that attachment to the world is somehow an impediment to a different kind of orientation.
Is there one character in particular who you see as an American dervish in the story?
I think that all of the characters are seeking some sort of liberation. I think it's a little more obvious in Mina's case that she's oriented towards a kind of mystical sense of life and of religion. I also do think that Hyde in a way is shorn of his ideas of faith and of God and of Islam, and that leads in a way to a kind of opening of the heart, what the Sufis would call an awakening of the intelligence of the heart by the end of the book. It's something he doesn't maybe understand, but...
But by questioning religiosity, he winds up approximating something that we associate with religion?
In a sense. I mean, I think that, the book is kind of a confrontational, let's say, battle between three points of view of faith. And one of them is the Orthodox literalist use of faith as an identity marker. One of them is the rationalist humanist rejection of faith. And then a third would be, say, the mystical personal use of faith as a way to deepen one's relationships or one's sense of the present. And I think that religion can often be used both to mean the identity marking as well as the deepening of one's experience. So in Hyatt's case, I think he finds himself on the latter side.
Now, he's around 10 when the book starts.
Yeah.
It's set in Milwaukee, Wisconsin in the 1980s, and I'm assuming it's based somewhat on your experiences growing up there.
Well, I grew up in Milwaukee in the 80s, so and Hyatt shares three letters of his name with mine, Ayad and Hyatt, so there's a lot of him, let's say there's a lot of me in him.
He narrates the story as an adult.
Yes,
is that important,
in his
mid-20s. That he has to have that perspective?
I think so. I felt that I wasn't going to be able to have the opportunities for commentary, for subtle commentary, if I narrated the book simply from the point of view of a 10-year-old. The issues were much more complex, and while his experience is subtle at times and perhaps precocious for a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old, it nevertheless required the remove of time to be able to bring it out fully.
He's the son of Pakistani immigrants. Can you talk about his family and who he is when we first meet him?
Sure. He's the son of Naveed and Munir, who are very, very secular Muslims, came to America because Naveed, his father, is a neurologist who is sort of, in some senses, typical of the immigration of that generation from Pakistan. Professional, often scientists, doctors. His mom is very well educated, but is a stay-at-home mom. And Naveed and Munir are sort of at each other's throats constantly. And it's a very dour household. And Hyatt's life sort of changes when Mina, this beautiful, brilliant Pakistani woman who is his mother's best friend from back home, comes to stay with them. She comes to basically rebuild her life after a horrible divorce in Pakistan.
Well, the marriage between Naveed and Munir is rather rocky. He isn't faithful. She accuses him of having affairs with white women. Is that a greater crime in her eyes?
To have affairs with white women? Yeah, for sure.
It would have been okay if he'd had affairs with Pakistani women?
No, that would have been a scandal of a different kind. But Munir's happy to, you know, happy to rub salt in the wound any way she can.
Well, but we are talking about a family that is trying to assimilate. Was that a bit of an anomaly in that Muslim community? Or were most of the people, the Pakistani immigrants in places like Milwaukee trying to assimilate at that time, becoming rather secular?
I think you see all sorts of, you know, I think you see folks who agglomerate or sort of find comfort in spending time around their own kind. And then you see folks who are interested in, you know, finding ways to fit in. And people are willing to go to different lengths to do that. And I think the book sort of shows a wide array of relationships with assimilation.
Is this to some degree a novel that written by a playwright and screenwriter? Because there's a lot of dialogue in it.
Yeah, it is.
And you try to reveal character through dialogue.
Through dialogue and through action. And I wanted the book to have a kind of immediacy that I associate with watching a really good movie. I didn't want the language to be in the way of the reader's experience. So, yes, absolutely.
Well, there are some words readers will be unfamiliar with, at least non-Arabic readers.
Sure.
Like kurban, baj, beta.
Yeah.
They all seem to be terms of endearment.
Mm-hmm, indeed, yeah. Kurban is used by the parents as a term of endearment toward the toward Hyatt, and sort of basically means sacrifice, but, you know, in a very loving way. You're my sacrifice. Beta and beti is son, child. So, you know, it's often used in South Asian, by South Asian parents.
My guest is Ayad Akhtar, who has written a novel called American Dervish to go along with his Pulitzer Prize winning play, and a new play that will discuss a little later.
Okay.
Let's talk about Mina. Okay.
Yeah.
So she comes to stay with this family. And why does she make such a big impression on Hyatt?
You know, I remember reading about Robert Wise, the great Hollywood director, who before he became a Hollywood director was an editor, edited famously Touch of Evil by Orson Welles. And he once described the only experience he'd ever had of being in the presence of genius was being in the presence of Orson Welles. And the way that he knew that he was having that experience was that the very thoughts he would have spontaneously in Orson Welles' presence were different. They were of a different nature, as if he were breathing a different kind of air when Orson Welles was in the room. I think we've all had some version of that experience with someone that we know. And Mina is one of those people who just lives at a different pitch of consciousness. And Hyatt meets her at this time when manhood is just beginning to insinuate itself into his body, into his emotional life, into his intellectual life. And so she's really like a thunderbolt.
Well, she's a combination crush and also substitute parent.
Exactly. As well as mentor.
Mm-hmm. She is divorced, looking to create a new life in America, but she's also quite devout. How important is Islam to her, and how does it figure in the way that she lives her life?
Well, she has her own way of seeing it. You know, she has, in a sense, remade it for herself. And she is someone who studies the Sufis. And so she follows the rules and doesn't follow others. But the rule is always to some end, which is the end being some deepening of one's relationship to the world.
Which is something that Hyatt would be unfamiliar with because his parents are not religious.
At all. Yeah.
And have not given him a religious education.
At all. They haven't taught him about the Prophet or the Quran. They haven't taught him how to pray.
They rarely go to the mosque.
Yeah.
And his father is critical of the Muslim community in Milwaukee.
Indeed.
He wonders why the more fundamentalist Muslims have even moved to America if they're so critical of the culture here. Does he see America as a place to redefine himself and also redefine Islam?
I don't think he's not spending any time thinking about Islam and himself. He's a rationalist humanist. He thinks all that chatters for idiots. But yeah, I think that America for Hyatt's father is a place to be free to make of yourself what you will.
Do you think, well, I mean, you wrote the book, so you know, or else I'm not sure how much authors really know about what they're writing until after the fact, after right. they talk about it. But does Hyatt take to religious training from Mina because it's Mina who's teaching him and he has strong feelings for her? Or is it that he has this great need to have some kind of religious connection, as kids at that age often do?
I think it's all of the above. I mean, you know, in the various mystical traditions, you have two sorts of spiritual techniques. Generally, they're called right path techniques and left path techniques. And right path techniques simulate the brain function of sleep to induce higher states of consciousness. And left path techniques simulate the brain function of sexuality to induce higher states of consciousness. A lot of the techniques, the Sufi techniques, are left path techniques. And you see that from the sort of dominant metaphor of union with the beloved, the ecstasy of union as the metaphor for higher awareness. So, you know, Hyatt's relationship to Mina on some level is a kind of Sufi metaphor. But to make it work, it obviously has to be set, you know, in a young adolescent's body.
Now, Sufis are often also persecuted by fundamentalist Muslims.
Indeed.
So they are seen as a kind of a weird group within a lot of communities.
Yeah, they are. You know, it's a long tradition in so many of the certainly in the monotheistic faiths. I mean, you see, you know, the great Catholic mystic Meister Eckhart was excommunicated and not brought into the fold for many centuries. So
Spinoza was excommunicated out of the Jewish community.
He was. I mean, I think in his case, of course, a mystic of a different nature wasn't a devotional mystic. But yes, there's always this tension between the religion of experience and the religion of obedience.
Now, in the case of Hayat, he really takes to learning the Quran and wants to become a Hafiz. What does that mean, and why does he want to become one?
It's a tradition in the Islamic tradition to memorize the Quran, and usually at a young age. The Quran is believed to be unique in that the very sounds of what when it is spoken, when it is heard, have the power to, you know, shift your relationship to things.
My guest is Ayad Akhtar, whose book, American Dervish, is our July selection for the Leonard LoPage Show Book Club. We invite your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard LoPate. Martha left a comment on our show page. She says, the book was supposedly about coming of age as a Muslim, but I saw little positive about the Muslim faith or the Muslim community or the Muslim mind. What's your response to that? Would you say that the book portrays Muslim in a negative light?
No.
Islam?
I don't think so. I think that, you know, my concern in a post-9/11 landscape, obviously there's a strong desire for a Muslim artist of some visibility to perform a corrective for the, you know, mindlessness that's out there about Islam. I don't see that as an artistic project. I see that as a PR project. In order to tell a compelling story, a truthful story, I have to tell a story about human beings, and they are flawed. And I think that the great sacred texts are also riddled with contradictions as well as great contributions.
Well, there are debates. You have debates in the book about the Quran and what it means, what things that happen in the book mean. In one, Hyatt's father and other men are talking about what the Quran says about Israel and the Jews. Is that kind of debating typical?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not talking about Israel, but the people, Bani Israel, which is, as I say, the people of Israel, not Israel, the state mm-hmm. today.
Although that...
Yeah, that comes Israel, later, but it didn't exist at the time of the Quran, is all I'm saying, yeah.
Trouble comes when Mina starts dating very chastely Nathan, a Jewish colleague of Hyatt's father. Why does Hyatt react the way that he does? Is it simply jealousy?
Yes. I mean, Hyde is a neglected child who has finally found someone to pay attention to him. That attentiveness has been combined with a kind of transformation of his emotional and intellectual and spiritual sort of sense of things. His sense that he could be losing her is very much, it's the motor of the book, because I think William Faulkner once said, literature worthy of the name must deal with the question of evil. And it's not my place to say whether the book is literature or not, but I certainly set out wanting to ask that question. And I think that Hyatt's sense of being abandoned by the good as she's as it's represented by Mina, is what drives his evil act. Because, of course, that's the climax of the book.
Which he does come to regret, of course, almost immediately.
Indeed.
Could Mina imagine marrying someone who is not a Muslim? She's a devout Muslim.
Well, yeah, again, she has her own relationship to the faith. But yes, I think that's part of the reason that things turn out the way that they do, is that she has difficulty imagining that.
And her suitor, Nathan, makes an effort to understand Islam. He even attends the mosque with Hayat and his father. It's a bad scene there, though, because the imam decides to give a sermon about the Jews, which is full of inflammatory rhetoric. This is what many Americans fear when it comes to Islam. Would this kind of sermon have been given in a typical service in Milwaukee in the 1980s?
I have a twofold answer to that. First, the opinions and comments that are represented in the book are not particularly controversial points of view in the Muslim world. So let's just sort of say that and let that be. And the second thing is, in writing a work of fiction, which has, let's say, the intent or the pretension to move us to a mythopoetic sense of something, Hyatt's visit to the mosque represents the entry into the collective consciousness. And so it's not, the point isn't to represent that is a sermon which is being spoken at a particular mosque at a particular time. I have no doubt that those sorts of sermons are delivered, and yes, I have also heard them. But that's not the point. The point is mythopoetic. It's to lead us, the reader, into, or lead the reader into, a sense of the collective. And so my feeling is, you know, there's been some, you know, I've gotten some grief from various people about, basically, I don't think nobody's been saying this stuff doesn't exist. Folks are saying, why are you bringing this stuff up?
But you can point out that it happens in other faiths as well.
Exactly.
Faiths that present themselves as
exactly.
The true faith. I guess the problem with Islam is that there are so many Muslims in the world. It's hard to imagine it feeling endangered in the way that perhaps some little Pentecostal church in Omaha might feel.
I think you have your finger on a very interesting question, Leonard, which requires a much longer conversation. But yes, absolutely.
Another listener, Carolyn Goldberg from New York, asks, do you actually know any Jewish person who was interested in converting to Islam? The ending suggests a sequel. As you said, that's a story for another time.
To the answer to the first, yeah, actually quite a few. There's a very – I can't remember his name. He's a very prominent Sufi thinker in Egypt who is a convert from Judaism, and also the very, very important translator of the Quran, Muhammad Asad, was Jewish, and his definitive version of the Quran, I think, I take very seriously. As for the sequel, yeah, you know, I very much want there to be. I think that the story, there's another chapter, or another series of chapters, a book, about Hyatt's subsequent spiritual development. And the relationship of Judaism to Islam, because, of course, they are so interwoven, for folks who don't know that.
But Muhammad was very disappointed when Jews didn't convert when he asked them to.
It's a long saga.
That's the beginning of the tension.
Long saga. Well, no, the beginning of the tension, actually, if we were to look at it from a literary point of view, because, you know, let's perhaps step away from the question of belief and step, you know, maybe begin to ask the question more from an interpretive point of view. You know, the Quran is quoting stories from the Old Testament, and it is quoting them in a fragmentary way, as if to imply that there was a familiarity with those stories amongst the people that the book was intended for. So the Jewish tradition, the Jewish scriptural tradition, was very much alive at the time and is part of what the Quran is. In some ways, a commentary on that tradition, a renewal of it, a shifting of it, a placing of centrality, the monotheistic centrality, the Abrahamic centrality in the Arab tribe. So, yeah, anyway, point is that there's lots of wonderful material to be explored between the Jewish and Islamic traditions.
Many of the themes here were also themes you explored in Disgraced in a very different context.
Yeah.
Is this something that is unique to assimilated Muslims in this country, or do you think these sort of conversations occur throughout the Islamic world?
I think it's a very interesting time to be young and Muslim.
We're seeing it in Egypt to some degree.
Yeah, we're seeing all sorts of things. I mean, we're seeing a lot of things, and I think it's right now it resembles something of like that chaos of early process or inchoate sort of explosion that is finding form. But it's exciting because, these sorts of conversations are happening.
Well, it's also about loyalties. And Disgrace was very much about loyalties, loyalties toward your country, to your community, and to your faith.
Right.
And to family.
Yeah.
You won the Pulitzer Prize for Disgrace. You have a new play coming up, The Who and the What?
Yeah.
Is that going to be a similar theme?
It is. It is. My mom was joking the other day. Well, she wasn't joking. She was saying, do you have to stop it with this Muslim thing already? I said, Mom, I don't control, my inspirations. You know, when those shift, they'll shift. But yeah, the next play, which starts at La Jolla, the La Jolla Playhouse in February and then comes to Lincoln Center in June, deals with a Muslim American family in Atlanta. And it's a romantic comedy of sorts, Muslim-American matrimonial mores. A younger sister who has a boyfriend wants to get married, and the older sister has sworn off love. And their father says to the younger sister, until you get your older sister to get married, you're not getting married. So it's a kind of knockoff of Taming of the Shrew in a way.
Well, I don't know if you've read the Makioka sisters. But
yes, of course, yes.
Well, somebody has pointed out that when novelists look at the body of their work, they realize they've been writing the same book again and again and again anyway.
Don't depress me, Leonard.
Are you planning to write another novel?
I am. I'm currently in the process of writing it.
So the play is completed.
It is.
And
I'm sort of still tweaking and, yeah, that whole process.
Do you have to determine when you have an idea these days because you do both? Well, actually, three, screenwriting as well, although I assume that's usually on assignment. You have to decide whether a story will work best as a novel or a play?
I think ideas tend to sort of reveal themselves in a form, So I don't spend a lot of time thinking, well, this would be better in this form versus that form. It just sort of comes to me in a form.
A listener, Deborah from Brooklyn, asks, who are some contemporary writers you admire and some of your literary influences?
Well, oddly, getting back to that question of exploring the question of, sort of Jewish-Muslim relations, I think part of that goes back to my own personal history. The first writer I read all of his books cover to cover in my very early teens was Chaim Potok. Started with My Name is Asher Lev, and then, The Chosen, The Promise in the beginning, Book of Lights.
Well, many of the themes would apply also to
Absolutely.
Somebody growing up in another religious community.
Absolutely. Well, not only that. I was reading about these people. I was thinking to myself, these are people I know, but they were Hasidic Jews in Brooklyn, and I was a Muslim kid in Milwaukee, but I felt there was such a sense of familiarity. And then when I got to college, I discovered Saul Bellow and Philip Roth and Woody Allen, and I just felt like the whole question of authoring Jewish American experience, whether consciously or less consciously, was so apposite for my own experience as in wanting to find voice or give voice to Muslim American experience, for lack of a better term. And there's such continuities of sensibility, of practice, of doctrine, of history, of mythology. So anyway, yeah, I think that if literary influence, basically those are the ones.
Well, there have been some pretty great novelists in the Arabic tradition, including a Nobel Prize winner from Egypt.
Sure, but he's writing about Egypt.
But my question is, why do you think, considering the fact that there are quite a few Muslims in the United States, that this community has produced a lot less literature than the Jewish community, than the Latino community? We can go on and even break that up into Cuban, Mexican, et cetera, et cetera. Why do you think that hasn't happened here? I would think something would be coming out of Detroit right now.
I have no idea. I mean, I see what you're saying.
I'm sure you've spoken to other aspiring writers.
You know, I think at least amongst the Pakistani American community, the premium on becoming a doctor or a lawyer is so extreme that you know, setting out, I've been doing this for 25 years, much to the infinite confusion of my parents.
Well, they must have been happy with the Pulitzer Prize.
Yeah, they sure were.
Ayad Akhtar is a screenwriter, playwright, actor, and novelist. He won the Pulitzer Prize for Disgraced. He also wrote the film The War Within. And his novel, American Dervish, which is now available in paperback from Back Bay Books, was the subject of this month's Leonard Lopecho Book Club. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Leonard.